So welcome back, everybody. We will have two talks for today. One is in person here, and the second is going to be online. The first speaker is Alberto Roper-Paul, and he will talk about gravitational wave signals from primordial magnetic fields and so on. Please.
Yep, thank you very much. In first place, let me thank the organizers of the conference for putting this up and also to make this possible in person and for allowing me to present my work. So I will be talking about the gravitational wave signal produced by primordial magnetic fields, more in general by magnetohydrodynamic turbulence, and I will in particular target those signals that can produce some gravitational signal in the PTA frequency band. So I'll be presenting the works that are here in red with some of my collaborators at APC, where I am at the moment as a postdoctoral researcher. So let me just give some motivation first. So we expect to have a cosmological gravitational wave background, which can be produced during the very early universe. Some sources that can contribute to this background can be coming from phase transitions or from inflation. And here I will be talking in particular about the QCD phase transition, because the specific timescale at which we have some phase transition in the early universe will characterize what will be the frequency of the final background. So if we have some more exotic high-energy phase transitions, as the Peche Queen, et cetera, we might have signals that could be detectable by future generation ground-based detectors. If we focus on the electroweak phase transition, we might have something that would be picking around those frequencies that can be probed by space-based gravitational wave detectors, as for example LISA. And as I was saying, if we focus on the QCD phase transition, we might have signals around the nanohertz, which might have already been probed by pulsar timing arrays. So let me rephrase this. So we expect to have an initial period of inflation that leads to the conditions of the Big Bang and a universe which is dominated by radiation, which is during which I will be focusing the simulations that I will be presenting. And we, until recombination, we might cross some different phase transitions, and the two that are within the standard model that we know of are the electroweak and the QCD phase transition. So again, as I was explaining, I will be focusing on signals that are produced during the QCD phase transition, which is a very violent process during the early universe in which we can generate velocity fields, and we can also generate primordial magnetic fields. So, as I was explaining, during these phase transitions, we can produce primordial magnetic fields, and these primordial magnetic fields could be then sourcing gravitational waves, which could lead to a background of gravitational waves. And if this is produced at the QCD phase transition, then we have a signal that could be probed by the pulsar timing array. So due to the high conductivity of the early universe, either if we have velocity or magnetic fields, this will be highly coupled, and this would be leading to MHC turbulence. So therefore we need to solve for the full magnetohydrodynamic equation. So we expect to have a turbulence from this. Some other source of gravitational waves that we can have in the early universe and that could also contribute to the background are those, the first two are also coming from phase transitions, so they can be bubble collisions of the new state of the universe after the transition, which are expanding and colliding and can be generating gravitational waves, and sound waves, which are the most well-studied sources from these phase transitions. But as I was saying, we expect the full situation to be more complicated and have a full system of magnetohydrodynamic turbulence. There's also cosmic strings and primordial black holes that can also contribute to this background. So let me quickly go through over the spectrum of gravitational waves. So in the high frequency regime, we have the ground-based detectors and future generation Einstein telescope and cosmic explorer. In the intermediate regimes, we have space-based gravitational wave detectors, so that's LISA, and next generation DSIGO and Big Bang observer. And in the smallest frequencies around the nanohertz, we have PTA, pulsar timing array. So there are like different collaborations that have been collecting data now for many years from observations from pulses, as it is schematized here, not to scale. So we have production of these. So we have the observations coming from the pulsars to the Earth, and we can try to find if there are any time delays in these observations. So if we accumulate these time delays over the duration of these observations, we can try to induce the presence of gravitational waves, and in this case that I will be focusing on a gravitational wave background. So in 2020, the North American NanoGraph collaboration reported the observation of a common process over several pulsars, which might be a gravitational wave background, which would be following this power spectral density coming from this for analysis of the time delays of the different pulses. So they were constraining what would be the slope of this background and also the amplitude. And I have to say that this is still not clear if it's a gravitational wave background, because the correlation between pulsars as a function of the angular separation of the pulsars is not clearly with enough statistical significance following the what is known as the Hellings-Downs curve, which is this blue line. So therefore, we still don't know if this is a gravitational wave background, but at least it's a common process that is observed over several pulsars. This has also been observed by the Parkes Bolzer-Time Array collaboration, by the European and by the international collaboration. So this is pretty interesting, and still we don't know if it's a background produced by gravitational waves, but it might be. So let's study that. So if we put all these observations, we see that these are in the nanohertz range. And if we consider now the sources of these gravitational wave backgrounds to be primordial magnetic fields that have been produced during phase transitions, in this case the QCD, therefore this is compatible with the observations. So this model is what we derived in this paper, where we were performing numerical simulations of the full system of magnetohydrodynamic turbulence, and we derived an analytical expression for computing these backgrounds. So as I was explaining, also you can have this at the electroweak phase transition, which could be probed by LISA, as well as more exotic phase transitions, and therefore you could have something detectable by future generation ground-based detectors. So now I will go into more details on how we are computing this. So we're performing direct numerical simulations. We use the Pencil code, which is an open source code, to solve relativistic MHD equations with a bit of a caveat on this relativistic. I'll explain that in a moment. And we source then the velocity and magnetic fields into the production of gravitational waves. So in order to, I will present now the MHD equations that we're solving. So we have a universe which is dominated by radiation. So we have an ultra relativistic equation of state of the pressure being 1/3 of the energy density. And we solve the equations over an isotropic and homogeneous universe, which is described by the Friedmann Lemaître Rosen Walker metric, which is just the flat expanding universe. So now we consider the stress energy tensor, which has contributions coming from the fluid motions, as well as from the Faraday tensor, so from electromagnetic fields. In particular, from magnetic fields, it has this form. So we have the full stress energy tensor, which, as I will be showing, it will be sourcing gravitational waves, and we will also use this in order to derive the hydrodynamic equations that we will be solving. So yes, if we take the conservation laws from this stress energy tensor, and as I was saying, this is the caveat, because we're assuming sub-relativistic motions in the sense that we are doing an expansion over the Lorentz factor up to second order in the velocity, in the fluid velocity. Actually, at the moment, we're working on expanding these equations to be able to solve for fully relativistic, but yeah, this becomes a bit more complicated. But the interesting part is that in this setup, we can derive some equations that, after scaling the variables into commoving variables, so the magnetic field and the energy density are commoving with the dilution due to the expansion of the universe. We can get rid of the scale factor in our equations, and we can, just adding some additional terms, we can solve this with usual MHD solvers, as the one in the pencil code, which we were adapting for this setup. So here we're also using conformal time, so everything is a conformal invariant, and then we have and we can just rescale everything back to consider the expansion of the universe after solving the system of equations. So now let me go into the gravitational wave equations. So we have perturbations over the isotropic and homogeneous universe, which are much smaller than the background metric. And with this setup, we obtain the gravitational wave equation, which is, as I was saying, sourced by the stress energy tensor, which is due to the anisotropic stresses produced by velocity and magnetic fields. Because the metric strain is gauge invariant, we need to take in this case, we take the trace and transverse gauge and project the stress energy tensor. So we solve for the full MHD equations, and then we source the gravitational wave equation at each time step in our numerical simulations to solve the gravitational wave equation in this form, which is a little bit modified as the usual in order to get rid of this damping term, because during the radiation-dominated era, we have that the scale factor evolves linearly with time, so therefore this second derivative just goes to zero. So let me now go into the numerical simulations. So for our numerical simulations, we assume that the magnetic field is initially present. So we assume a fully developed turbulent magnetic field that has been produced during the QCD phase transition in this case, but again applicable to different processes in the early universe. So we have in the larger scales a magnetic field spectrum that follows the Bachelor spectrum, which is proportional to k to the fourth, just due to causality and because the magnetic field is solenoidal. And at the smaller scales, we have a Kolmogorov spectrum that the magnetic field follows due to the fact that it's produced following MHD turbulence, as we've shown in these papers, but in many other simulations of MHD turbulence. So our initial condition, it's this magnetic field spectrum, which follows, as I was saying, the k to the fourth power, and this is a smooth broken power law, and then goes down into minus 5/3. So we start with this initial field, which in wave number is well-defined, but it has some component which is Gaussian noise, so it is completely stochastic in phase, and we solve the MHD equations and compute the production of gravitational waves. So we have some parameters in these simulations, which are the strength of these magnetic fields, given as the total energy density of these magnetic fields. We also have what is this spectral peak, which is normalized by the Hubble horizon at the time of generation. And finally, at which time scale, or which temperature scale, these magnetic fields have been produced, in the case of the QCD phase transition, around 100 MeV. So these are the numerical simulations. So in this case, the red and blue dots are what we obtain from the simulations. So we observe that for the gravitational wave spectrum, we have k to the minus 8/3 at small scales, which is due to the Kolmogorov spectrum at those scales. We have something that is closely proportional to k, which is linear, which is something that we found for the first time in previous type of simulations. That differs from the analytical understanding, which was this k to the third power, as it was previously derived in analytical calculations. So therefore, in these simulations, we observe an intermediate regime, which goes something proportional to k, similar to something proportional to k, which goes from the spectral peak down to some characteristic scale. These oscillations that you can observe are coming from the analytical model that we have derived in this paper, that is down here, that I'm presenting. So if we take the envelope of these oscillations, we see that they are pretty accurately modeling the numerical simulation. So so this is interesting, and we can use then this to apply our results to many different scenarios. So I don't know how much time I have left.
Like 5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay, then I can explain a little bit more about this. So in this numerical, therefore we predicted what is the position of this break into the k to the third power, which is not clear from our analytical model. So in our analytical model that I will present in a moment, we obtain this final spectrum, and our free parameter that we cannot derive from the analytical model itself is the position of this break, which is characterized by some what we call an effective final time of the sourcing due to the turbulence. So we use these numerical simulations in order to compute what this would be in as a function of the characteristics of the magnetic field. So if you consider the gravitational wave equation that I presented in a moment in its normalized version, you can find that the sourcing term is producing gravitational waves with the Green's function, and then the final gravitational wave energy density spectrum. It's a nonlinear combination of this stress with coming from the unequal time correlator of this stress. So then it becomes complicated from the analytical point of view to know what is this object here, which is coming from the MHD evolution of the magnetic field. So we observe that if we assume that the magnetic field evolves very slowly in comparison to the production of gravitational waves, which is what we are actually observing in these simulations, then we can really simplify this previous integral, and we end up finding those oscillations that I was showing in the simulations. And the envelope of those oscillations is given by this expression here, which is depending on the different parameters of the magnetic field, some constants and some term that we can compute using a numerical integration of a numerical integration. And this is explaining this k cube part, something that follows like a logarithmic that in the asymptotical limit is this k, there's something proportional to k, and then follows as k to the minus a thirds. So this model is pretty well predicting the what we observe in the simulations. And this free parameter, that is this effective time that I was talking about, it's can be obtained as a function of the Edison over time, which is the time scale that the time scale of the dynamical evolution of the magnetic field. So we obtain this numerical fit coming from the simulations, and therefore we have all the ingredients to use the analytical model to compute what will be the gravitational wave background obtained from obtained from these magnetic fields. So if now we put this into the gravitational wave background produced at the QCD phase transition by varying these different parameters, we can obtain what is compatible with the pulsar timing arrays, and we can give a range of possible parameters of the scale of this magnetic field at its strength that are compatible with here with the different PTA collaborations. So here, these different colors are for the different PTA collaborations, and therefore this allows us to constrain the magnetic field parameters with this analytical model. So finally, let me just say, so if we put all of these constraints coming from the characteristic scale and amplitude of the magnetic field in a plot where here this is the strength of the magnetic field now given in Gauss in commoving quantities, so this could be the value at the present time and this could be the scales at the present time. So we have something that is produced at the QCD phase transition. This will be evolving after recombination, and then at recombination it is frozen in the plasma. So after that, we expect these primordial magnetic fields to be present in cosmic voids even at present time. So we can connect what is compatible with pulsar timing array observations. We can connect this with current observations by Fermi on distant places, which put a lower bound, and with Faraday rotation measurements, which put an upper bound. So therefore, these observations are consistent with the different bounds that we know at present time. And we can also here apply this to LISA, as was done here, and apply to different scenarios if we assume that this is produced at the electric phase transition. So let me here conclude my talk. So yeah, just explain that we have then performed these simulations of MHD turbulence to compute what would be the gravitational wave background produced by different sources in the early universe. If we assume that these are primordial magnetic fields that are leading to this MHD turbulence, then we can explain the observations by pulsar timing array as a magnetic field produced at the QCD scale. Then we observe that this magnetic field evolution is low compared to the production of gravitational waves, which allows us to derive an analytical model to compute these gravitational wave backgrounds. And then here is just the values of the different parameters that we have constrained using PTA. So Yes, so this is it. Thank you very much for your attention. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions? Please.
I think that turbulence among the gravitational waves must produce electromagnetic waves with some spectrum. Is this could it be in contradiction with measured chamber spectrum?
With a measure what? Sorry, I didn't quite well understand that.
Magnetic turbulence create not only gravitational waves but electromagnetic waves too, and there could be some special spectrum which differs from measured. And before you model gravitational waves spectrum, you must to find restrictions to measure the turbulence from existing electromagnetic spectrum. Do you do this?
Yes, yes. So you mean the what would be the effect on like on the initial spectrum that we consider for the magnetic field, for example, for the generation of gravitational waves, and what would be the magnetic field produced by MHD turbulence, right? Is that the question? Or so at very small scales, we expect the magnetic field to follow a Bachelor spectrum, which is from causality, and by imposing that the divergence of the magnetic field is zero, then you can show that at very large scales that this has to follow some k to the fourth power spectrum. And then at large scales, we assume that this magnetic field follows a Kolmogorov spectrum, which is, yeah, I mean, there are some different scalings that one can find, like Eroshnikov-Kreisnan and Goldrake-Sathar, that is also k to the minus 5/3, and different scalings that one can have. But so in this paper, and with some collaborators, and also in some previous papers of Axel Brandenburg and other people, they were showing that if you start with some injection of energy and some characteristic scale using these MHD equations, and you solve for the full system, you end up obtaining some magnetic field spectrum that has this Kolmogorov spectrum in our case. So is that, does that answer to your question? Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a significant difference from the standard case where you have magnetic field involved? I mean, in the evolution, in your numerical simulations, I couldn't see in the graph. Probably there was a very tiny difference, no? Or
if we don't assume magnetic fields
at
all,
if you just neglect that, you could, investigate without having, assuming zero.
Yes. So
effect
so,
on magnet by so, the magnetic.
Yeah. So if we don't have any magnet, let me go quickly back. So if we don't have any magnetic fields, then we expect that sound waves could be the dominant source of gravitational waves, and this has very well studied in general, although not in the general context of MHD turbulence. So there's still quite a lot of work in that sense in order to study only those.
No, I just wanted to see, if you have these simulations involving the magnetic field, what is if you, decrease the amplitude or the contribution of this magnetohydrodynamic part? If you take the limit, without having, you did some numerical simulation, so it could be seen in those. Do you have any estimate? I mean, how much they are different from the, if you are increased the...
I don't quite understand, sorry. If we don't have any magnetic field in the full system of like if we have only hydrodynamic turbulence,
for example.
Is that...
Yeah, my question is if you are, just decreasing the contribution coming from this magnetohydrodynamic stuff, what is the limit then? I mean, much different from the...
So in these simulations that I'm showing, we're only assuming that initially there is a magnetic field, so we can model the different strength of this magnetic field, but we assume that there is no velocity field initially, so it's purely... The velocity field is later driven by MHD, okay. But initially it's zero.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, in future simulations, we want to do kind of combination of having velocity and magnetic fields and see then what are the different scenarios.
Yeah,
for that. But yeah, I can point you to some papers where they only focus on the MHD evolution in this kind of a scenario, and then considering different the different scenarios in terms of the strength of magnetic and velocity fields.
Okay.
Which is this paper that I have pointed here. Is this first paper I can...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This and previous papers. Yeah.
Okay, we can talk later.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you very much.